Last week, we left off speaking to you about Samuel's sons, how that these two sons, they perverted justice, and they accepted bribes, and they were evil sons. After all the prayers of Samuel, and after all the instructions that he had given unto them, we find that these sons were not like their father. And now therefore these people, they came to Samuel and they desired to have a king reign over them. And he told them what sort of a king it would be, how that he would take their sons and he would have them to run before him, and how that they would likewise drive his chariots, and how many of them would be taken into the service. And likewise, their daughters would be taken to be confectionaries, and they would be cooks, and they would have to work for the king. And this Samuel was directing them what manner of a king they would have, where they had now Samuel, and they had the Lord as their king. It would be entirely different when they had this man that they desired to be king. And now we find that God told Samuel to go ahead and anoint a king for them. That they had not rejected Samuel, but they had rejected him from being king over them. And we find in the 9th chapter that there was a man by the name of Kish. He was a Benjamite, and he was a mighty man of power. And he had a son whose name was Saul. And he was a goodly person. He was taller than all the rest of the people from his shoulders upward. We have here a description of this man, Saul. He was good looking, he was handsome, and he was very tall. This is something that human beings look upon. And this is what even the Israelites looked upon when this man was brought before them. And we find that the asses of Saul, his father, they were lost. So he sent his son Saul with a servant to seek after these asses to see if they couldn't find them. He takes the servant with him and goes looking. He goes through the land of Benjamin and through other parts of the country of Israel, but he finds them not. He's 3 days searching for these asses and he did not find them. And he decides it's time to return home, because probably his father would be concerned about him, where he was staying, and why he didn't come back. This teaches us that Saul respected his parents and loved them, and therefore he wanted to go back to his father before his father would be concerned about him being lost. But the servant, he said to Saul, "Listen," he says, "there's a man of God in this town where we are now, and whatever he says always comes true. Let's go up to him and ask him. Maybe he can tell us where the asses are or what happened to them." "Very good," Saul says, "but what are we going to take to the man? We haven't got anything with us. The bread is all spent. And what shall we give the man as a present?" "Well," the servant says, "I have here a half a shekel of silver. He's that we'll give to the man." "Very well," Saul says. So they went up to the city, and as they're coming up to the city, they meet some maidens coming down to draw water, and they ask these maidens if the seer was there. Before times, they used to call the prophet of God a seer, and therefore you find this word in this chapter. And they said, "Yes, he's up in the city, he's to come and he's to make a sacrifice, and the people are all waiting for him. If you go up to the city, you'll find him there." So these two, Saul and his servant, they go up to the city to look for the seer, namely the prophet. Now the Lord had told Samuel the day before in his ear that he was sending unto him a man out of the land of Benjamin, and that he should anoint him to be king over his people Israel, and that he had heard the cries of his people, and he was going to give them a captain who would deliver them out of the hands of all their enemies and fight for them. And now when this man Saul came and asked where the seer was, he's asking Samuel. This teaches us that Samuel was not a very important character to look upon, that he was a common, ordinary individual. But when he asked this question, why, Samuel said, "I am the seer. Go up before me unto the high place, For today ye shall eat with me, and shall abide with me in my house. And now as for the asses that you are seeking, they are found. You have no need to worry about them. Upon who is Israel looking upon? Are they not looking upon thee and upon thy family? This made Saul speak and say, Who am I? Why, I'm only a Benjamite, he says. And what is my family? One of the lowest in Benjamin. But Samuel commanded him to go before him. And he went up with him, and he dwelt in Samuel's house. And Samuel, he's speaking unto him concerning what was going to take place. He took him up upon the rooftop of his house, and he communed with him. He learned of him what sort of a character he was and what his family was probably, and he probed him with many questions. But we find likewise that he slept there that night in Samuel's house, and the next morning he's going to leave to go back to his own father. And now this man Samuel, he takes hold of him and says to him that he should tell his servant to go ahead of him because he had the word of God to speak to him. And Samuel, he took a vial of oil, and he broke this over his head, and he anointed him to be captain over the people of Israel. And he spake unto him, and said unto him, that when he would leave him, certain signs would follow to prove to him that God had chosen him to be king over the Israelites. That when he left him, he would meet three men who were coming down with loaves of bread, and they would give him two loaves, and he should accept them. When he went a little further, he would meet likewise a company of prophets coming down, and they would prophesy, and the Spirit of God would come upon him, and he likewise would prophesy. And that when he went from them, he should do as occasion served him, for he was to be assured that God was with him. And we find that as he turned away to go from Samuel, God gave unto him another heart. And all these signs that Samuel had spoken unto him were fulfilled that day. He did meet these men. He did prophesy. The Spirit of God came upon him. He received a new heart. Not a new heart, but another heart, it says. And likewise, we find that this man, Saul, was then anointed by Samuel out of a vial. He was not anointed by a horn of oil, but a vial which is breakable. This typified likewise that when Christ would come into this world, he also would administer these offices of being a king, priest, and prophet. And likewise, when David was anointed, he was anointed with a horn of oil. A vial is breakable. His kingdom would be breakable. It would not stand. Where David, when he was anointed with this horn of oil, it was stability. His kingdom would remain, and it was a type of the kingdom of Jesus Christ, whose kingdom would be forever and ever. And now when we read these things, my hearers, they are probably very confusing to us. For when we follow the life of this man, Saul, we must sincerely admit that he had no grace in his heart. Now you would say, well, how is that possible now? A wonderful providence concerning this man, that the asses of his father were lost, that he had to go and look for them, that he had to meet this prophet, that this prophet spake to him and told him that he was going to be king, that he received another heart, that the Spirit of God came upon him, that even Samuel said to him, God is with you. What would you make out of it? Probably you've read it. Probably you said, well, what shall I think of this man? I thought the same thing. I'm supposed to teach you. What are we to believe then of this man Saul? You know his life, most of you that come here every week. You know that he sought the life of David. You know that he had all the prophets killed that were at a certain place. And you know likewise that when he came to the end of his life, he murdered himself, he committed suicide, he fell upon his sword. The definite proof that the man had not the grace of God in his heart, that he did not love the Lord, that he did not seek the Lord, that he did not favor the Lord at all. We may prove this, that he did not receive a new heart. When God comes into a person's life, and God comes into the heart of a person with his spirit, this person receives the Spirit of God, and it remains there forever. It never leaves that person. You read that the Spirit came upon Saul. He received the gifts of the Spirit. He did not receive the person of the Spirit in his heart. Many people receive gifts of the Spirit of God, and these gifts are very exceptional in their lives. A person may receive these gifts and become a teacher. He may become a preacher. He may become a king. He may be exalted to a throne and be led to do many wonderful things, even for God's people, and still not have the Spirit of God within him. Very definitely does the apostle teach us that ye are the temple of God. The Spirit of God dwelleth in you. Wherever then the Spirit of God comes into a person, there is a great change. We must be so careful, my hearers, with sudden changes. We cannot lay the hand on a person immediately and say, well, that character, he's converted. He's born again. He shows signs and definite proof of it. We must watch narrowly over such things that happen so suddenly and so quickly. The Spirit only came upon this man. It didn't come into his heart. It didn't make him a new creature. It didn't give him a new birth. It didn't give him sorrow for his sins. It didn't lay him down at the feet of Christ so that he had to cry to him for mercy. But when the Spirit of God comes into an individual, the first thing that this Spirit does, my hearers, is enlighten that creature. It's like light coming down into the darkness. We are dead. We are in trespasses and sins. And when the Spirit quickens and makes alive, that person is enlightened to see what a sinner he is. He never seen himself that way before. He never felt that he was that either. And he has to do with a God who the Spirit reveals is a just God, is a holy God, a righteous God. And when this Spirit begins to enlighten such a person, that person wants to run away from everybody. He wants to get alone. He wants to get on his knees. He wants to cry to that God for mercy. Do we read it of Saul? No, we do not. And my hearers, when this Spirit comes into a person, it likewise leads this person to pray, to seek God. The Spirit, as a spirit of grace and of supplications, operates on the heart of such a person. That person becomes a praying person. From the day that that Spirit enters into his heart, he remains a praying person until he leaves this world. He may be without prayer many times. He may just have the form of it. He may just have lip work. But at times he finds that the Spirit again indicts prayer in his heart. The Spirit likewise leads this person out of himself. At the beginning, when this happens, a person begins to try to build up a righteousness of his own to satisfy God, or he wants to pay God for what he has done. And he tries in every way to satisfy God. He tries to obey the law. He tries to live so strict and so close that he wouldn't sin anymore. And now he finds that sin is too strong for him, that sin overpowers him. He can't overcome sin. Why, sin is a mighty enemy, my hearers, and no human being can overcome sin. But that brings that person down, that he is a guilty sinner in the sight of God, and it makes way for the application and the revelation of Jesus Christ to his soul. And then he is given to see by precious faith that there is a way of escape, that God has provided a remedy for sin, and all this Spirit exalts this precious Jesus before this sinner. Has he done so to you, my hearers? Is he precious unto you? Do you need him? Or do you say, if I don't have him, I'm lost. It's undone with me. But if I have him, I have everything that I need for time and eternity. You never had that before, did you? You never sought after him before. You never needed him before. You could go right on your merry old way and live the way you wanted to. You could be religious. You could come to church. You could come to catechism class. You could come to Bible class. But you still live your own life. But when God comes with his spirit in your heart, there's a new life created there, my hearers. I'm trying to point out to you that Saul did not have this new life, that he never was attached to God, that he never loved God, he never feared God. I'm positive of that. And if any person thinks that I'm speaking an untruth, he may contradict me in it. And now this man, Saul, what happens to him? He's exalted to be king. And we find that Samuel had told him that he should abide 7 days in Gilgal until he came down there. And then when he came down to Gilgal on the seventh day, we find that Samuel, he called the families together and they cast lots. And the family of Kish was taken, the family of Matri. And then we find that Saul was taken. This was a sign given that this man was to be king, was to be the ruler over the people of Israel. And when they searched for him, they couldn't find him. He had hid himself amongst the stuff, a sign of humility, a sign that he wasn't very proud of himself. And God revealed where he was, because they asked God where that this young man was, and he said he was hid behind the stuff. And they went and got him. And when Samuel presented him to the people, why, he was a handsome young man, a gallant young man. That was the kind of a man that they wanted. Oh, they looked upon that man and they said, just what we need. He will lead us and he will fight for us, and all the enemies will be afraid of him. This is what the people thought of this man Saul. And here we find that Samuel anointed him again to be king over his people Israel. And Saul, he was found to be this person that all the people esteemed and liked very greatly. But there were some that said, what, this man going to reign over us? We won't have him to be king over us. And these people, of course, they were dissatisfied with the choice that was made. Probably they were jealous. Probably they wanted to be king themselves. But there were a certain band of men whose hearts were touched, and they followed this man Saul as king. And now we find, my hearers, that there was a king by the name of Nahash. He was king of the Ammonites. The Ammonites were descendants of Ammon, the son of Lot. And this king, he was a barbarous king, a wicked king. And now he arose with his army to fight against the Israelites, against the men of Jabesh Gilead. And now this happened about 11 days after Saul had been selected to be king. And now this king, he demanded that these people, the men of Jabesh Gilead, give themselves over unto him. And they consented. They sent messengers out to him, and they said that they would open the gates and that he could come in and he could do what he wanted with them, because they were afraid of him. Well, he says, not only will I do that, but he says, I will take out the right eye of every one of you, he says, and I will lay it for a reproach upon Israel. How barbarous this king was. He wanted to cut out the right eye of everybody in that place. And of course, these people, they feared this very greatly. And then they held a council with him and said, well, now listen, let's see if we can't get some help to fight against you. And if we can't get any help, well, then we'll just have to give ourselves over unto you, and you can do with us as you want to. But give us 7 days to see if we can't find help. Well, he thought, sure, you can have 7 days. You're not going to find any help anyway. The Philistines are on the other side fighting against Israel. Where are you going to get help from? So he gave him 7 days respite. And now these men of Jabesh-Gilead, they went up to Gibeah of Saul. And they proclaimed unto the people there what this Nahash, this king, wanted of them. And this king, he desired that he would take the right eyes out of every one of them. And when the people heard this, they all began to cry and to weep. And Saul, he came from behind the herd, and he seen all the people weeping and crying, and he said, "What aileth the people? Why are they weeping like that?" "Well," they said, "look, this is what this king Nahash wants to do. And these people haven't got anybody to fight against them." And suddenly the Spirit of God came upon Saul. And he took an oxen and he cut it into so many pieces, and he sent a piece to every one of the tribes of the coast of Israel. And he sent it with this word: "Those that will not come up after Saul and Samuel, that will be done to them as it was done to this ox." And the people, they greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. And they all came out with one consent. And he immediately had an army of 300,000 men and 30,000 of the tribe of Judah. And now he sent word back to the men of Jabesh-Gilead by the messenger, saying, "By the heat of the next day, you shall have help." And now these people, the messengers, they went back to Jabesh-Gilead, and they told them what Saul had done, and that they were going to get help. And they sent word out to this king, Nahash, who was lying wait for them outside of their city, probably, that they would come out to him the next day around noontime. They didn't say that they had got help, no. But we find that Saul, he came, and he separated this army in three companies. And he came when it was the morning watch, and he smote the Ammonites with such a great slaughter that two of them could not remain with each other. They were so scattered, they all had to flee. And so many of them were killed. And Saul, he obtained a great victory over the Ammonites. And now when they came back after this battle, the people that were so for Saul, they said, "Where are those that said we will not have this man to reign over us? Bring him here and we'll kill him." "No, no," Saul says, "nobody will be killed today. For," he says, "the Lord has wrought a great salvation in Israel today, and no one shall be killed." How wonderful that this man gives the glory and the honor to God who gave them the victory over these Ammonites. And now Samuel was so taken in with this man too. I think Samuel, he could not see through this, that this man Saul was not a child of God, because he had been told by God that he was to anoint him, and he had told this man himself that the Spirit of God would come upon him and that God would be with him. And now Samuel always looked at him as thinking he was probably a child of God. And now he takes this man Saul to Gilgal. And he says, "Let's renew the kingdom here." And they gathered together to Gilgal. And they again anointed Saul to be king over Israel. And all the people shouted, "God save the king." They were all so happy now with their king. He had proven himself to be a king. He had gained a great victory for them. And therefore, they were attached to him. Therefore, they even wanted to slay some of their own countrymen for him. And now while they're here at Gilgal, we find Samuel, he's going to speak unto the people. He speaks to them concerning their great sin. He says, "There now is your king who you have made choice of. The Lord has given you a king now to reign over you. But," he says, "that ye have rejected God from being king over you." And he begins to speak unto them how that he had lived before them from when he was a child. He admonished them and spake and said, "Which one of you can say that I have taken their ass or their ox, or that I have opened my hand to receive a bribe and somebody has blinded my eyes to take it? Witness against me this day," he says, "and if I have done so," he says, "I will restore it unto you." And they said they could not find anything wrong with what Samuel had done. He had judged them all his life. He had been in their midst as an honest and a sincere man. And they had been well blessed with this man, Samuel, for he had contact with heaven. And God had been with him, and God had given the Israelites peace all the while that he ruled over them as judge. And now he's speaking unto them and calling upon them to witness whether he had ever done anything wrong or evil in their sight. And they had to admit that God was their witness that he had never done anything wrong unto them. Oh, what a wonderful testimony does this man give of his life. How honest and how sincere he was in the midst of these people, and how he sought their welfare. And now they had rejected him. They had rejected God as their king. And still this man, he still sought their welfare. He still loved them. He still spake to them and said unto them, ye have done a great sin in choosing you a king. I will reveal unto you that God is angry because ye have done this. I will pray to him that he will send thunder and rain so that you may see that your sin is very great. And he prayed, and God sent thunder and rain in the midst of a wheat harvest where they never had any rain and never had any thunder at that time of the year. It was proof to these people that God was angry with what they had done. And now he commands them and says to them, even though ye have committed this great sin, oh, he says, fear the Lord with all your heart and serve him, and do not turn away from him, and then you shall abide, and so shall your king. But if ye turn away to vain things and do not serve God, then ye shall be consumed, ye and your king. And all Samuel says to them, the Lord, he hath chosen you to be his people. The Lord will never forsake his people, for it has pleased the Lord to choose you as his people. And God forbid that I should not pray for you, he says. And therefore he again speaks to them and tells them to fear God and serve him and obey him and not rebel against him, and then it would go well with them. Oh, how wonderful is this man Samuel. He is a true minister of God, my hearers. Oh, he directs the Israelites in the right way and in the good way and tells them that they should serve God with all their heart and fear him. Oh, may I direct you as a Bible class, as Samuel did the Israelites. Oh, may I plead with you that you would fear this God and you would serve him with all your heart. For if ye turn away from him, ye shall be consumed. And we are not any different than these Israelites of old, my hearers. They desired a king to reign over them. In Adam, our covenant head, we did not remain what we were. We choose someone likewise to be king over us. We were not satisfied with the way God had placed us in paradise. And therefore, we choose the devil to reign over us. We fell away from that good and that kind and that merciful king. And we come under the hands and under the tyranny of this awful character, the devil. And my hearers, this devil who rules and reigns over each and every one of us, he is likewise aiming to destroy every one of us. And Saul, he was the type of a devil, for he persecuted and followed after David, who was a type of the Lord Jesus Christ. He sought to kill him and his followers. And so the devil seeks to kill and to slay and to destroy the followers of the Lord Jesus Christ here upon earth. And my hearers, this man Samuel, he proved to them by a miracle that they had sinned against God. And when they heard this thunder and seen this rain, they confessed and said, we have sinned against God. Oh, he brought them in the right place. Oh, what a blessing if we could bring each other to that spot where we could confess our sins and say, we have sinned against thee. We have left thee in Adam, our covenant head. Oh, we have chosen a king. Oh, we have done such a great sin besides all the other sins that we have done. Oh, that my hearers were brought to this place. Then the words of Samuel would be a source of comfort. For Samuel spake unto them and said, The Lord will not forsake his people for his great namesake, for it has pleased the Lord to choose you as his people. Oh, if you are one of these people of the Lord, if you are a child of God, what a mercy, what a wonder it is that God will never forsake you. God will never forsake his people, Samuel says, for his great namesake. His name, his honor, his character, his word is at stake if he forsakes any one of his dear children. And although we may feel left and we may feel forsaken and we think God won't have anything to do with us anymore, he has true to his word as Samuel spake even to these Israelites. Oh, what a comfort it is if God would give us a little faith to believe that he'll never forsake the likes of us who deserve to be left, to be forsaken, to be trampled upon. And that for his great namesake. And now my hearer Samuel said, For it has pleased the Lord to choose you as his people. Oh, it has not been of anything in any creature that they have become children of God. It is because God has chosen them. God made choice of them from all eternity. God loved them, and God comes in this time state and visits them by his Spirit and reveals that they are his children. It is all of grace and grace only if we may be one of these people. All the words of Samuel directed to Israel of old were comforting words. May they be a source of comfort to you who amongst me fear the Lord. For truly, if God has given you grace, then you wish that you could fear him. You wish that you could serve him with all your heart. It's your continual complaint that you can't serve him. You don't fear him the way you should. Oh, how miserable you feel because you can't be the way you want to be. But there is a will in you that you would wish that you would live without sin and be holy before him. And now this good God, he looks down and he knows your heart and he takes the will for the deed. He knows that we are dust. He knows we can't fulfill what we wish to do. And therefore he looks upon us in love and mercy and in favor. And therefore Samuel spake to the people in this way. And now we find, my hearers, that this man, Saul, he reigned about 2 years over Israel. And after he had reigned 2 years over Israel, why then we find that Jonathan, and he was his son, and he was entirely different than his father. Oh, he was an honest and a sincere and a God-fearing creature, this Jonathan. He was a friend of David all the days of his life. And you can't put anything upon this man, Jonathan, like you can upon Saul, his father, for he lived an untarnished life, this man. And we find that Jonathan, and he likewise was with his father. He was a prince. And Saul had 3,000 men. 2,000 men were with him, and 1,000 were with Jonathan. And now the Philistines, they had garrisons in the land of the Israelites. And every once in a while they would send spoilers out and they would rob the land. They would take everything that was good back into the land of the Philistines. And these people, the Israelites, they had nothing else but opposition from these people, the Philistines. And now there was a garrison of these Philistines, spoilers in the land. And we find that Jonathan, he took his 1,000 men and he went up against them and he made them flee before him. And now when this was heard, Saul let the trumpet be blown in the land that Saul had destroyed a garrison of the Philistines. He had not done it. Jonathan had done it. He took the honor. He took the glory of this. But when this was known by the Philistines became angry. And they gathered all their forces together. They gathered 30,000 chariots, it says, and 3,000 horsemen, and people as much as the sand of the sea, and they came up to fight against Israel. Did Saul take his army and go out to meet them? No. This was now their king. And now the people, when they seen all these soldiers of the Philistines coming up to make war against the Israelites, they began to tremble. One left, the other one left, this one left. Pretty soon he had hardly anybody left under his dominion. All the soldiers began to flee. They went into caves, they went into holes, they went into pits, they went up in the high places to get away from the Philistines. And now Samuel, he had commanded Saul to remain at Gilgal, and in 7 days he would come down to him. And now Saul, he did not dare to go up against the Philistines without having Samuel come down and offer a sacrifice and seek God for his help. And now, while this was taking place, everybody was going away from Saul. They all followed him, trembling, it says. And he soon only had about 600 men left out of 3,000. And now, in these 7 days, while he was waiting for Samuel to come, he became so impatient. Oh, he couldn't understand why Samuel didn't come a little bit earlier. And now the seventh day, he said, well, if he don't come today, well, then I'll offer sacrifice myself. And he waited and he waited, and Samuel didn't come. And then finally, he called for a sacrifice. He called for an offering, and he went and he made an offering and a sacrifice unto God, which was not his work, which was contrary to the commandment of God. For the priest was supposed to do this work. And now, whether he employed a priest to do it or not, it does not say. But he went ahead against the commandment of God and did this. And just as he had finished, Samuel came. And Samuel said unto him, what hast thou done? Well, he says, all the people were departing from me, he says, and the Philistines are so near to me, and I was afraid. So he says, I forced myself and offered a sacrifice and a burnt offering. Samuel says, thou hast done foolishly. For if thou had obeyed the commandment of God, then thy kingdom would have remained. But now God will give this kingdom and the kingship to another man that is better than thou. And now Samuel departed from him, and we find that Saul, he has a garrison of men, and Jonathan also has a garrison of men with him. And now all these Philistines are around about the Israelites. And now Jonathan, and he speaks unto his armor bearer, and he says to him, come, he says. He says, let's reveal ourselves to the Philistines. And now if they say to us, come up, that's a sign and a token from God that he's given them into our hands. Now this young man, Jonathan, he was a fearless warrior. Oh, he looked up first to God, and he looked for a sign and a token, and he put the sign and token before God, and if God would give this sign, then he would go up and fight against them. And now this man, Jonathan, and his armor bearer, they revealed themselves to the Philistines. And the Philistines, they said, look, the Hebrews are coming out of the caves. They're coming out of their dens. And they said to Jonathan and his armor bearer, come on up, we'll show you a thing or two. And this was the sign that Jonathan was looking for. And immediately he and his armor bearer, they climbed up this steep place, and they went up towards the Philistines. And when they got up to the Philistines, Jonathan began to smite them. And he smote them, and he smote about 20 men within a short field. And then we find that God was with this man, Jonathan, because all the Philistines began to tremble. There was a great trembling in the host, and even the earth shook. It was like an earthquake. And Saul, he seen this from a distance, and he was wondering what was taking place over there. And he questioned, and he says, who has gone from us? Well, Jonathan and his armor bearer. And then when he seen what was taking place, he asked the priest to step away. And then he took his army and he went after Jonathan and his armor bearer. And now all the people come out of the holes and out of the caves, and all the people that went over the river Jordan, to be safe, that they likewise arose, and they began to war against the Philistines. And now, while they're warring against the Philistines, Saul, he makes an oath. And he says, no one shall eat any food today until we venge ourselves upon the Philistines. And if anybody does eat, it will cost him his life. And now Jonathan, he hadn't heard what his father said. And what a foolish oath to take. For anybody knows that if you eat, you gain strength and you can fight better. And now he made this oath. It was contrary. It was a wrong oath. And now as they're going after the Philistines, they're going through a field. And in this field, there's a lot of honey. In this territory, in the eastern climate, honey is very prevalent in fields. And we find that Jonathan, he's pursuing the Philistines, and he likewise takes his sword, and the honey is dripping off the tree, and he takes some and he eats it. And someone said to him, your father forbid us to eat anything with an oath, he said. Why, he says, my father is foolish. He says, look, he says, I've taken a little honey, he says, and look how it has refreshed me and brightened me and made me so strong. Why, he says, my father had let you eat, he says, why, we would have a greater victory over the Philistines than we do. And now, my hearers, we find that they slew the Philistines. And the people, they became so faint and so weak that they couldn't follow after them. And they received some of the spoil and some of the booty. And their people, they were so hungry, they began to kill the animals, and they began to eat the animals with blood, which was a sin, which they never should have done. And Saul, he commanded the people not to eat the animals with blood. And he stopped them. And then he says, let us gather together and let us pursue the Philistines all night and let us destroy them. And first he inquired whether God would go with them and give them the victory over the Philistines. And he brought the priest before him, and the priest inquired, but he got no answer. And now Saul, he said something was wrong because they got no answer. He says, someone has done something wrong. None of the people said anything. So now they cast lots. And the lot fell upon Saul and upon Jonathan. And he said, as sure as my name is Saul, even if it is Jonathan, my own son, he says, he will surely die. And now when this lot was cast and it fell upon him and Jonathan, they asked for a perfect lot, and it fell upon Jonathan. And Jonathan, he says, what? Because I have eaten a little honey, he says, must I die? And Saul says, thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. But the people, they said, Jonathan shall not die. And they rescued Jonathan out of the hands of Saul so that he did not die. Seeing this, how that Saul, he would even slay his own son. A good son, a God-fearing son. My time is gone, my hearers. I'd like to continue with this history of Saul, especially where today the lesson was supposed to be about David. There are so many chapters in between that I could not get to that. As you noticed, I've been hurrying over the history of Saul and of the Israelites. Next week, the Lord willing, we have a lesson about the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. That will be the topic. Next Lord's Day, the Lord willing. That's all for